I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do.
This is Bill Duncliffe with another edition of the Can Do Horse Racing Podcast, where the heroes and history of horse racing come alive, part of the In the Money Media Network. Last week, we talked with former jockey Karen Rogers about her meteoric rise as a young jockey working the various circuits up and down the East Coast. Karen's story is captured in her book, Racing with My Shadow. Karen was a better and media favorite, but there was another aspect to her story which she kept hidden from the public for a long time. Here's the other side of Karen's story.
Let's pivot to that, if you don't mind. And I know, like I said, I greatly appreciate you agreeing to be on the podcast, because I know some of this can't be easy to talk about, even though you obviously have been very frank about it in your book. I'm going to just kind of let you run with it here, because I think it's a story that people need to hear and be aware of, if they're not, that these kind of things are out there. And yeah, I'm just going to let you kind of go with that part of the story, if you don't mind.
Well, my stepfather came into my life when I was 9, and he was a pedophile. Basically, he was also gay, which my mother didn't know, but he actually was targeting my mother to be around her to get to my sister and I, who was a couple years older than me. But I ended up being the one that he honed in on. And emotionally, it was very hard on me, because he would say, I'm your secret boyfriend. I don't love your mother. I love you. And it was, the emotional abuse was so much worse than the sexual abuse, which, he ended up raping me later. But the emotional abuse was the real trauma, believing, and I thought I ruined my mother's life because I took away the person she loved, because she was manipulated and she thought he loved her. And because of he had been abused by his mother. So he was a mess, and his mother had been abused. I mean, it goes back generations, but I didn't know that. All I know is that I hated myself because I felt like I took away my mother's boyfriend because he chose me. So it was, I escaped into racing at 16 because I wanted to get away from it all and have control over my life. And he was a steeplechase jockey, but I said he's a show rider in the book. But anyway, he came from money and everything. So, the whole book talks about my feelings and how, racing was my escape. And Karen the jockey was good, but the real me was bad. So I was just immersed in riding to be okay. And it happens to a lot of people. A lot of successful people, very successful people, have been abused. And it's a way, you have this drive that's beyond a normal drive. And that's why you succeed, because you have to overcome who you think you are and prove you're okay. And so, my persona as a jockey saved me. Racing saved me. But down in the end, I got in a relationship with a leading trainer and everything came crashing down. It does catch up with you. So,
well, grew up in the Boston area, and it was very fortunately, I was not one of these victims. I grew up in an Irish Catholic family, and it was around the time when, as it turned out, we discovered many years later that priestly abuse of young boys in particular was rampant, for lack of a better term. But having grown up in that time, I was, of course, interested in the stories of these people when it all came out. And what you talked about, finding some other channel in life to be good at, let's say, to hide the other part, was not unusual at all in these stories. It was an interesting fact that I found. Many of the victims said this. If I had gone home and told mom or dad that the priest did this to me, I would have been in trouble for making up a lie, right? I mean,
Let me tell you. They hide behind, a lot of them are philanthropists. They hide behind a wonderful front. They're the epitome of society. They're successful. They're nice. They befriend the parents. He could never do that. They're priests. That's what they hide behind to get away with it. You put other people on a testimony, on a stand, and they're going to say, no, this guy could never do that.
Right.
They're not sleazy guys wearing raincoats walking around. They're men in suits with very good backgrounds.
Well, and they have this evil power to these manipulators that they hone in, don't they, on the vulnerable and their vulnerabilities. They have it's almost like a sixth sense, right, for identifying where they can go with this. But and you mentioned that, and I think you're right, and I've said this before when I've talked about it, you know, any of these sexual abuse scandals, whatever, they all do come down to power, right? Take Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood, right? He had power, and so he was able to, or he used that for sexual abuse, and you hear about it everywhere. And the damage that it does is just incalculable. You know, in your case, I don't think it's unusual that, like you said, you go from one abusive or manipulative relationship to another, right?
Well, like when I met the man that I married was very big in racing. I changed his name. He passed away last year. Mm-hmm. And I might as well say it. It was Jan Nehrud, and John Nehrud's son. And John Nehrud invented the Breeders' Cup. He was Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He had all these top horses. And so I called Jan Pablo Garcia in the book. I make him Spanish to change his identity. He was actually a pilot as well. I made him a sailor. But he was not a pedophile, but he was very, he was a drug addict, and he was very manipulative. And he took the fact that I had low self-esteem from my, he found out about what happened to me. And he used this to control me, to quit racing. I believed everybody at the track hated me. He made up stories. He actually took me down, but I was so broken inside that it wasn't hard to do. I ended up drinking, suicidal. And then when I found out he was a liar, like my stepfather, it was like I was reliving my lying stepfather who hurt me all over again. So, you know, I couldn't hit a more low bottom than I did. I was in, you know, suicide, drinking, cutting, bulimic, you name it. I was just trying to do myself in, because when I was in the marriage, I found out he lied and he was on drugs, and I just was like, oh, just finish me off, because that's how I felt. Finish off what my stepfather had done. But I wasn't aware that my feelings toward him were based on my stepfather. Like, my subconscious made my husband my stepfather. He was much older, so in my subconscious, he was my stepfather. And my book shows and unravels how this happens, but you're kind of set up to fail when you're abused emotionally and sexually as a child.
Yeah.
And you end up in bad relationships because you're trying to fix the old problem, but you just meet people that are just as, you know, manipulative.
Yeah. I imagine they were probably on a parallel track when you were writing the book. It must have been difficult to relive that, but hopefully therapeutic as well, I guess.
You know, I wrote it, and it helped me figure out what happened to me, because I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was winning races, but I was drinking and going out with people that were bad, you know, just trying to kill myself at night. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? I was away from Jan, and I didn't know what was wrong with me, actually, because I thought he was the whole problem. But then I found an article that I prayed to God, show me what's wrong with me. And in the jocks room, there was a Sports Illustrated, and in there was an article about Robbie Davis. And Robbie had taken 5 months off after the accident with Mike Venezia, where Robbie's horse ran over Mike and killed him. And Robbie took 5 months off, and nobody could understand why. Well, the article explained that Robbie had been sexually abused by his stepfather. And I'm reading it, and I'm going, wow, maybe that had more effect on me than I thought. And I couldn't believe Robbie told, because it's a big secret.
Yeah.
So I started going back, because I was at the end. I was like, I can't live like this anymore. With drinking and everything. So, and I prayed for a spill to work it out. I had a spill, but then I was drinking and I didn't want to deal with it, because it's something you don't want to relive. But I did, because I knew if I didn't, I wouldn't survive. So my book was actually my figuring out what happened, and my mom helped me connect a lot of dots. And that was my original manuscript. It was 1600 pages long, because I had all my racing stories and, so then it sat in my, and then I was, after I wrote about it and I prayed, God delivered me from drinking 31 years ago. I mean, everything. He just took it all away. So, but my book sat in the computer for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
I homeschooled my son and I learned writing and editing. And so I just put it out 2017. So I have long healed from everything. And the point of the book that I put it out was to help survivors, not to take down my abusers. I've forgiven them. I have no animosity toward them. It was just to help survivors that to have hope and to tell my horrible story so that they would know they weren't the only ones that went through all this craziness.
I wanted to ask you about the forgiveness in particular. Were you able to do that? And it sounds like you were, but that had to be a struggle, I would imagine.
Not really. I mean, forgiving them was easy because I never blamed them. I mean, but my stepfather, I thought, loved me. And then when I found out, he just dumped me as soon as my mom found out. And then he went after my little sister, who was three, did that to her. So I realized he never did love me. And that's the only reason I didn't fight back. He would say he was going to kill himself if I didn't call him and all these other manipulative things. And I loved my husband. So it wasn't hard to forgive them. The hardest thing was believing my mother loved me because I had been so brainwashed. And I, as much as I knew she loved me, I also believed she hated me. And that was a total lie.
Hmm.
Because my stepfather's mother, he had a love-hate relationship with her. And the same way he projected his love-hate onto his mother, he projected that onto my mother. And he really believed my mother was evil because his mother was. And the same way I projected my stepfather onto my husband. It's like your past, your subconscious projects the people you meet as being the person who raised you or loved you. It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
Wow. So the hardest thing was the relationship with my mother, but it was the most healing, and she helped me edit my book, and we're best friends now.
Well, you know, you were able to overcome all that. It's just harrowing to hear this because those of us who are had the good fortune not to go through it. I just can't even imagine. You know, I know how vulnerable I was as a kid, and like any kid is, you know. And to imagine navigating just growing up in the first place, and then having that, you know, on top of that, is just you know, it's no wonder that you struggled with what you know, with what you did. You mentioned the article by Robbie Davis. Did you actually talk to Robbie about it as well? I imagine you did.
Not till much later. I think it was when my book came out, or I put him in my dedication. I was doing a book signing at Saratoga, and I called him, and he came over to the book signing, and he was signing books with me, which was real sweet. His family, his daughter read it, loved it. So it was key. It was a God thing. I mean, how that article showed up just when I was praying, what's wrong with me, God? Why am I drinking? Why am I suicidal? I was, you know, winning races at Belmont. Because I had been off for 5 years when I was with Jan. And when I broke up with him, I went back to riding, even though I was straight out of a mental hospital. But I'm like, I don't know what else to do. And my agent, Dominic, said, you can do this. I said, Dominic, I might end up in a mental ward next week. He said, no, you're going to be fine. I believe in you. So, you know, but it was my story that helped me heal. It was writing. It was the truth. You know, the Bible says the truth will set you free. And if you really go back and visit the truth, and my mother helped me see that I was a child. I didn't want my stepfather's love. He projected that he was my boyfriend onto me. I didn't think I want a boyfriend. He told me that. And yet I thought it was my idea. And another thing, it's easy to manipulate kids, but it's easy to manipulate adults. My mother was manipulated.
Yeah.
I mean, he had her write a play about me while all the abuse was going on. And he made me out to be a brat because of the pony races. And that's not why I was acting bad. I would act bad because he would say he loved me, and then with my mom, he'd say he loved her, and he'd be all over her, and to me, he said he hated her, and I would be angry, like, you're lying. You know, I would get mad and act out, and he had her write up a play that I was just a bad sport. So he manipulated her as much as he did me. These people are very manipulative and very charming.
Well, it's an evil power at play, right? To somehow turn what he was doing to you into your problem, as opposed to his problem is, you know, it's I don't want to, I use this word and I apologize for you, but it's clever, right? It's clever in an evil way.
It's generational, and they bring up the pedophiles and then they use them. And they keep using them, and then their kids, they use their kids. It's a generational thing, and it's a big secret. But it went back to his grandfather had a pedophile ring. Hmm. So for high-level politicians. And so you can't really blame him for being as messed up as he was. And I really believe, like, he said he loved me. Maybe in his own convoluted way he did. I mean, who knows what he was told, right?
Yeah.
It's so demented, and he had to have a split personality as well to handle all the different things he was, my mother and me and whatever, whoever else he was, you know. And I know since I've talked to people in my town that, you know, with, he went on after me, you know, with other kids, and then he got remarried and those kids and my sister, and it goes on and on. They don't stop.
Yeah. When you read that article by Robbie Davis, was that like a instantaneous moment where things changed for you, or because that's more of like a Hollywood type thing, you know, or was it just something that kind of put you on the right path?
Oh, the whole way home from the track after I read it, I'm like, Robbie told. He told. I can't believe he told. He told. Yeah. I would never tell anybody. Nobody knew my story. Nobody. And my mother discovered through a letter that my stepfather wrote to me, and I shredded it, and I put it in the bottom of the garbage. He used to write to me in the jocks room, call me, I love you, blah, blah, blah. I was 16, 17. And my mother found a letter, and that's how she found out. But nobody else knew, and I was astounded that he told. But then I thought, if it had such an effect on him, maybe it had a bigger effect on me than I didn't think it affected me at all.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't. I didn't connect all my drinking and my bad relationship with Jan to my stepfather. And I said, maybe I should go back and revisit this. And it's the last thing I wanted to do, but I didn't want to continue on the way I was going. I wasn't going to survive. So, it was the turning point. Yeah. But
that took a lot of courage, Karen. And I, God bless you for coming through all of this. It's a remarkable story. And I just recommend anyone. There's two things I would say. I would recommend anyone, Racing with My Shadow is the name of your book, and I would recommend anyone to pick it up. But, you know, going back to David Ashcroft and the story you told, too, I hope that anyone who listens to this will contribute to, contribute to either a fund that helps children who are victims of sexual abuse, or contribute to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, or contribute to both, right? Because your story is remarkable, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share it with me and with the audience. So thank you.
Well, I would say don't contribute to any organization because they're all crooked. I would say if you know somebody that's struggling, give them the money yourself.
There you go. That's
great. A lot of these organizations are not what they say they are. So, but if you know somebody that's struggling, you know, like God says, give, and you'll be blessed. And so that's what I would say. And you know, there's a lot of people that you don't know what they're going through. You don't know what their past is, and there's a lot of hurting people. I give God all the glory. I mean, He made me the person I am, and through much struggle, you become a better person. And so, you know, I've given my life over to Him. I just let Him open doors and shut doors wherever I go, and because my story is a miracle. And God can do that for anybody. He could, you know, he could bring anybody out of the worst despair. He could heal my stepfather. I mean, anybody. He can change anybody, and He could heal the worst things you've been through. God is just a loving God that can bring good out of bad. So that's my message of encouragement. She stood a standard 16 hands.
Karen's book, Racing With My Shadow, can be found on Amazon and other book site markets. I'm so grateful to Karen for her willingness to share her story, and so happy that she was able to fight through all that was thrown at her and, with God's help, come out on the other side a healed person. To think of the difficulty of navigating such a treacherous journey is awe-inspiring. I hope Karen's story inspires you as it has inspired me to keep an extra eye out for those around us, near and far, and be on the lookout for anyone who might need our help in some way, shape, or form. I hope you'll join us next week for another edition of the Can Do Horse Racing Podcast. In the meantime, may good health, happiness, and gratitude for both be yours today and always.
I got the horse. Ride!